going to break from tradition here just for a moment, because I was behind the choir and not in front of them. I didn't have the opportunity to see David Gamow being the bird. But when he sang the words timid and tiny, it made me feel so good inside, so happy. Perfect, perfect role there. I don't know how many of you pay attention to the dedication pages in books, but I always do. It always fascinates me who and what the author chooses to honor there. And I remember when The New Path came out, I think it was in 2008 or 9, but when I read it, I just didn't get it. I was really surprised by what Swami had put there. Fortunately, I had grown enough to not say, really? Like, as if Swami had made a mistake. But I sat with it for a long time until I could understand the depth and the meaning of this story that he chose to put there when Master said truth can really present itself in many ways, and I hope to come back and be able to relate all of that to you about Yogananda and his mission and how it relates to all of us, each of us finding our own mission. There's another story that Swamiji tells about Master. One morning there was a woman who came to one of the Sunday services, and she told Swamiji afterwards that morning she had been praying, and in the midst of her prayer, a voice came to her and said to her, Christ will come today. And of course, she didn't know what that meant, but later a friend of hers picked her up and brought her for the first time to Self-Realization Fellowship, and she met Master, and then she realized that she listened to Master speak, that's what the voice meant, that Christ had come in the form of Master. Really, Master's mission in the West was twofold. I mean, it was manyfold, of course, but twofold in this regard. One is to show the unity of the teachings in the Bible and in the Bhagavad Gita, and the other was really to show the deeper underlying unity of the truth as it is spoken in every religion. There's a wonderful story that I heard either Anandi or Bharat tell once about Saint Joseph of Cupertino, who was a saint who lived, actually spent a lot of his life in Assisi, and he used to pray there in the Basilica of Saint Francis. And one day the ambassador from Sweden came to see him. And the ambassador from Sweden was Protestant, because that's what Sweden was at the time. But they went into the basilica and they decided, of course, to pray together. What would one do with a saint otherwise? Saint Joseph was very well known because he levitated all the time. He would sit to pray and his energy would rise, and so would his body, right off the ground. And everybody knew this about him. So he sat down with the ambassador from Sweden, and they prayed, and they were holding hands, and St. Joseph started to rise, and so did the ambassador. And they both spent the rest of their time in prayer, levitating, and then they came down. And the ambassador from Sweden said later, well, I went up a Protestant, and I came down a Catholic. You know, really, what a wonderful little story about the truth being in all teachings. Master actually told the disciples all the time that Jesus actually really did appear to Babaji. We, of course, don't know what it meant that he appeared. We tend to put that in physical form, but one way or another, it hardly matters. And he said to him that while people in the West were still doing good work, that they had once again forgotten about the depth of meaning of that deep inner communion with the truth and with God. And he said to Babaji, let's send an emissary to the West. Of course, we say that every week in the Festival of Light, but I'm repeating it to say the Festival of Light is not just simply a nice story that Swamiji wrote. Master actually told him that that happened, that Babaji and Jesus decided to send an emissary, and of course that emissary was Yogananda. So he came here with that purpose, and he came to specifically show us exactly what was in that story. So of course that story was in the path because it underlined all of his great work. As Master often says, no saint would ever say that it was their truth alone, or only their truth, that is the truth in all the world. No great saint says that. But of course, many other people say it. I don't want to focus here for very long today because there's so much that's uplifting to talk about. But just being in the world right now and hearing about all of what's going on, the extraordinary brutality and the number of atrocities, all in the name of religion, by people who have clearly just been unable to find the underlying truth and the place where we are, in fact, all one. I have friends who just came back from Africa, wonderful people. They were a priest and a nun at some point, but they each left the convent and monastery and subsequently got married. Many of you have met them and heard me talk about them before. And they just, all their lives, traveled around the world doing very great work. And now they're in East Africa, where we all know there's a huge amount of violence going on. In fact, they just came back, and I was with them the other evening, and they told me that they were not allowed by the people who've been hosting them to leave their hotel very much because they've become known as the people who are supporting interfaith communities. They're really trying to bring particularly the Muslims and the Christians together in Africa, though they told me there's a nice, a sizable population of Hindu people as well. So their lives are always in danger. But they told me that the head imam there, that they've known very well now for a number of years, so the head of all of the heads of the Muslims in this area, was just killed brutally not that long ago because he was known to support some of the work that they're doing. And yesterday I read in the paper that the heads of the Muslim community in England, this is just very interesting to me, wrote a letter to the Prime Minister and said, it is not right that we call these terrorists the Muslim State. And then they expounded on what they've been doing. He said, we need to start calling them the un-Muslim State. And they wrote the three letters in abbreviation, a pseudonym, right? And they said, this is what we're going to call them. This is what we would like all of the media to do. And I thought that was just perfect, because they're saying, how can we, Islam State, and let's call them the un-Islam State. So UIS, they're going to call them, this was on the news, because everybody is just wondering at how this can possibly happen, that people in the name of religion could be doing so much damage. Yogananda said that people's understanding is so limited that they just simply can't imagine how things could be, except in terms of their own understanding of things. So everything gets limited to what one human being can imagine is the truth. Of course, this doesn't leave room for things to be very expansive in any way. there's an entire chapter that's devoted to this very topic in Swamiji's biography of Master. And there's also a whole chapter in The Essence of Self-Realization. Of course, I didn't know this till yesterday when I was thinking of the subject. Just started browsing through the books. But that's just how essential it is that we understand that every master of every religion, in Master's own words and in Swamiji's words, comes with the same message for us. And most of us sitting here know this, that there's an inward path to God, that it exists in every one of us already, and that the sole purpose of this life is to allow our ego to ascend that path and reunite with God. That all of the ways that God has manifested directly in this world, all of the avatars, come and let us know. This is how Master said, a saint is a sinner that never gave up. That all of these great avatars suffered in the way we suffered. They all come. They've lived through many incarnations. They've suffered their own delusions. And what they came to show us is by being steadfast in our goal of working towards God, that every one of us can do it. Jesus said, everything I've done, you can do, and everything I am, and everything he is means Christ consciousness. You are too. So I'm just really highlighting for a couple of minutes the importance of this story that Swamiji related to us. Master's entire purpose in coming here was to make that story real. As he said many times, he didn't come to convert anybody to any religion. He came to help us all discover our true nature, our true self. It really intrigued me when I realized yesterday that, of course, 2014 years ago, Jesus came. We often say he was Jewish. I guess he was a rabbi. But he came to meet with the Jews, and from there came Christianity. And many centuries later, he came to St. Francis, and he literally said to St. Francis the same words that he said to Babaji later, rebuild my temple in San Damiano. And out of that came a Franciscan order. And then he appears to Babaji, and he says, the lights on the highest altar are growing dim. And out of that, Master comes here, and we have self-realizationists. So Jesus doesn't really care about the religion. He cares about the principles underlying all religions. Swamiji says that at the end of Yogananda's life, he asked Jesus, he said, did I do it? Did I teach them your teachings? And he said at that moment, he saw a beautiful white light, the room filled with white light, and Jesus appeared, and he said, the Holy Grail passed from Jesus' lips to my lips, Master said, and Jesus said to him, the cup that I drinketh from, thou dost drink from also. What a beautiful affirmation. And Swamiji said that Master shared that story a lot, though the people who were editing, Laurie actually, the woman who was editing the autobiography initially, felt that it was too arrogant a story to put in the AY. So for that reason, it got edited out. But literally, Jesus confirmed with Master that he was doing exactly what he had come to do. Now, the Gita reading, believe it or not, is really where I'd like to focus today, because it's such a powerful reading that basically says each one of us has our own dharma. There are as many paths as there are human beings. It says better to die trying to do your own dharma than to take on somebody else's. Those are very powerful words. To say to us, how are we going to find out what our dharma is? What is our path? It's not an easy thing to do, but that is our job in life, is to determine who are we and what are we supposed to be doing. It's one of the most, you know, that I've so often mentioned that moment in the Gita where Krishna says to Arjuna, you have to fight. If you don't fight, everything will be lost. Basically, and I use it to make many points in classes and in sermons because it says so much, but really, basically, what he's saying to Arjuna is, this is your dharma. You don't even really have a choice. You have to do this because we each come in with a spiritual blueprint and no two are alike. It's like snowflakes. It's why our fingerprints are different. And nobody can ever tell us how to do it or who we're supposed to be. Even those people who love us the most in the world, even our parents with all of their loving intention, or our partners or our best friends, nobody can ever really know what our path is because the paths are directional and each one of us is heading back to God. And from every single perspective in the universe, it's just a little different. And nobody else could really know. Of course, there are spiritual principles. This isn't a statement that gives people a free-for-all to go out in the world and do anything. We're talking about people who are spiritual aspirants. When you really want to know God, you have to go deep enough. You have to develop your intuition, your soul's ability to hear God accurately and know what is your dharma and how are you going to do it. Because it is virtually impossible for anybody other than these avatars or these great teachers, people who have that kind of vision to see the whole picture and not just the little picture that we see, nobody else could possibly know how to tell us who to begin to work with exactly who we are. Really, in essence, how to be ourselves. This is why we always say that self-honesty is so important on the path. Because if we're not willing to stop and take an honest look at where we are, and if we can't begin to figure out how to go forward, there's nobody else in the world, again, other than these great teachers, of course, who's going to be able to tell us how to do that. Unfortunately, we don't come in with instructions. Nobody tells us, and we spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. I've told this story so many times when I was in my late 20s, and I had been searching, but I had just walked onto the path, and I would never, until yesterday, have related this story to this, but it popped into my mind. I was drinking a cup of cold coffee, and I always drank cold coffee. I always let my coffee get cold. And in a moment, it dawned on me that I hated cold coffee. And I'm saying to myself, why do I do that? And then it dawned on me, and it just happened so quickly, that my mother loved cold coffee. And then it came to me, and I was horrified. I have no idea who I really am. That thought came to me. So I developed one of the most annoying practices in the world, which my husband tolerated for about 6 weeks, and then one day literally grabbed me and said, you have got to stop this. The thing that I developed was that if anybody asked me any question about anything with any import, I would not answer for 2 minutes. Can you imagine how awful it was? And, you know, of course, he was right when he told me I had to stop. I can't imagine. I must have looked like one of those people who was floating around in the clouds somewhere. I really wasn't. It was actually an extraordinary spiritual practice, though I didn't know it at the time. I was moving much more based on fear because I realized I didn't know myself. I had no idea how I felt about anything, relationships, education, sex, love, nothing. Because I was willing to drink cold coffee for all those years, who knew what I was willing to do? And it really helped me. I mean, it was really one of the first realizations that I had. And it really helped me start getting to know who I really was. We all have that moment in our lives where we realize that we're not going to find what we want outside, that we have to turn inside to do it. There's a woman whose name is Joan Borisenko. I'm sure many of you have heard of her. She wrote this great book called The Ways of the Mystic, Seven Paths to God. And of course, the seven paths are all about the chakras. And she uses each of the chakras and what each of the chakras represents. The earth, fluidity and creativity, the heart, to talk about all of the different ways that one might begin to find their way back to God. But of course, she knows that those seven states are limited. But she tells an amazing story at the beginning of this book that I want to share with you because it shows us how truth is one, paths are many, and each of us finding our own path work together. Why would we ever even be looking for our path if we weren't looking for that place of unity, of oneness? What else would be driving us? We're all looking to find that state of being peace, of being calm, all these things we've talked about so many times. That place of oneness, that's the only place we can be at peace when we're no longer part of the duality that we're born into. And she describes the story of her mother's death. And I'm going to shorten it just so that I can get through it. But it is so beautiful. When her mother was dying, she said she had a vision. And in the vision, she was a pregnant woman. And she was also, in the same moment in the vision, giving birth. And then ultimately, she became, in the vision, all at the same time, the child, the baby, coming through a dark tunnel and being born into the divine light. And she knew that she was living in having an experience in that moment of so many different realities that she realized that it was all one. She came out of that knowing that she had seen God, that just as her mother had delivered her here into the body, she had delivered her mother's soul into the light of God, and she had seen God. And it really brought to me the story of my sister's death, because my sister and I had a very contentious relationship. She was 2.5 years older than I was, and a very troubled woman. The harder you tried to love her, the more angry she got, and the more she would fight with you. She literally couldn't bear love. And it was very difficult growing up in the same house with this woman. But it dawned on me just yesterday that I never, ever felt in my whole life with Gwen that I should ever be anywhere else but with her. I never felt like I was supposed to get away. There was a story where I called a friend of mine who was a very good psychiatrist and a very wise man. And I said to him, you know, I have to go and see my sister again. And can you talk to me and help me? Because this was years ago. Gwen died in her early 40s. And I was 2.5 years younger than her. But I said to him, I don't want to go there with anger. I do not want to go there and feel like I have to defend myself. And he, with all this bravado, I haven't thought about this story till last night. But it's so powerful. He said to me, oh, look at you. You're walking onto a virtual battlefield. And what do you want to do? You want to go there and just stand in front of her shooting at you and people shooting at you and be calm and with your heart open? And I thought to myself last night, oh, my God, That's exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to do what Arjuna did. I didn't know that then. I wouldn't have said it then. I wanted to. And when I went home, not that time, but eventually, and I helped Gwen die, and it was an extraordinary experience. I've shared it before. But I now realize that I was going in and out of my body because she couldn't bear to go alone. And I would say to her, look how beautiful it is. And then I'd come back. And she'd say, come with me. And I would say to her, not in words, no, Gwen, it's not my time, but look where you're going. It's so beautiful. And when I read Joan Borisenko's experience yesterday, I realized this is what happens once we allow ourselves to be taken to that place where we can actually see God. We get right on this path, we jump to it, and we want to stay on it because we would do anything in the world to get back there. And there's only one path, and it's right inside of us, and it's just working up through these chakras, letting this kundalini rise, and being so quiet that we hear God. There's no other way, but the way really is simple. And we're never the same again. Once we've been handed these experiences, everything in life, this is the genius of Hari Das's statement. When somebody asked him a question, and he said, oh, that's easy. The answer is spy dog. What is spy dog? Solving every problem in the direction of God. And I can't tell you how many times I've used that. What is the right thing to do right now, Shanti? What is dharmic? No matter how hard it is. Just recently I had an experience where I was really struggling in my mind with the situation. And a friend was giving me very good advice. And I had to say to her, let me come back in a day or two. My ego's entirely in the way. Right now I want to fight. I mean, fortunately I could know it. That was not solving the problem in the direction of God if I decided to go in and fight and level this person. No, I want to solve the problem in the direction of God. That's the only choice we have in life. We really have no other choice because our karma is going to keep coming at us and it will not all be pretty. Sometimes it is. That's nice when you get to make the right decision and it's wonderful. But what about all the times when it's hard? I'm going to finish by telling a story that I heard once that happened to a woman up at the village with Swami Kriyananda. This woman was somehow betrayed or felt that she was betrayed. I don't even know the story, but she really felt that she had been wronged. And apparently she was a very passionate woman. So her reaction took the place, presented itself the way a passionate person's might. She was enraged, she was moody, she got depressed, she wouldn't come to events. And then finally one day she came out. And the way I heard the story, somebody said it felt like a little opening. And Swami Kriyananda must have felt that little opening. And he went over to her and he put his arm around her and he said to her, you are about to make a big change. That is why all of this is happening to you. You are about to make a very good change. You have all of the love and the support of this community. And you have all of my love and support. And then he said to her, move forward now. Don't look to the left. Don't look to the right. Get your spiritual goal right here and move only towards it. Isn't that beautiful? That was a message for all of us. That's why people keep telling this story. That is exactly what we need to do. We are the only one in the world who knows what our path is. And we cannot look to the left or to the right because Maya is so stunning in its ability to take us out of spy dog. And that's where we want to be. And the way to stay there is to just get our spiritual goal in mind and put one foot in front of the other and don't waver from the path.